Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
What is going on, guys and girls? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter, and today we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on November 27th, 2020. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I know I did. Got a little bit of time off of work, got to eat some food, and just basically be lazy and watch football for an entire day. So that is always something that I can be thankful for. I'm also thankful for all of you guys for choosing to listen to this show. Once again, it means the world to me. So thanks again for you guys tuning in today. But like I said, this is going to be the SmackDown review for the November 27th edition of SmackDown. At the very end of the show today, I am going to have a top five for you guys. This one is going to be the top five wrestlers due for a breakout 2021. And just to specify that a little bit, I'm not necessarily saying that those specific superstars are going to have a long run of success after that. I'm basically just predicting that the dominoes are somewhat falling in the right place, the stars are aligning, and they're hitting their stride at the right time and setting themselves up for a big 2021, in my opinion. So after the SmackDown review, we will get to that. But not to waste any more time here, we will get right into this SmackDown review. And this one starts with Jey Uso, who comes to the ring, and he's referred to as Main Event Uso by Michael Cole. It's actually the first time that I have heard that nickname be used for Jey Uso, but I mean, when you think about it, it definitely does make sense considering all of the main event matches he's had over the last couple months, dating back to even before the draft. Ever since he has aligned himself with Roman Reigns, he has definitely been in the main event picture, so that nickname certainly makes sense. But it seemed like his whole reason to come out to the ring was to introduce Roman, but before he does, Jey begins to hype up the Universal Champion by reminding everybody that he beat Drew at Survivor Series, and as long as Roman is here, Drew will always be the number two. And as he finally begins to introduce Roman to come out to the ring, he actually gets interrupted by Roman's music. And Roman walks slowly to the ring with a pissed off look on his face, and they play the video package recapping what happened last week, or last Sunday at Survivor Series. And then Roman asked Jey why he didn't leave the arena like he told him to at Survivor Series, and that he didn't need his help to defeat Drew. After that, he questions Jey again about the outcome of the Team Raw versus Team SmackDown match at Survivor Series. Jey's excuse is that the reason the team got swept is because they wouldn't listen to him, which basically made Roman's point for him and answered his rhetorical question, because he tells Jey that they didn't listen to him because they don't respect him. And that if they don't respect him, then they don't respect Roman. And if they don't respect Roman, then they don't respect their family. The thing you've heard Roman say multiple times to Jey Uso. But basically, he kind of just stares at Jey angrily and tells him that he doesn't like the way that Jey is making him feel. And he makes him feel weak. He also had a few other choice words for him about being in the locker room begging for leftovers. I'm sure you guys caught that part too. He actually said that twice, so I feel like WWE is definitely trying to get that point across. But after he says that he doesn't like the way he's making him feel, he just drops the mic and he leaves the ring. And Jey Uso, you know, he waits a little bit and then follows him. But before Jey Uso leaves the ring area, you see a graphic pop up on the screen that is promoting a match that is going to be next after the commercial break between Otis and Baron Corbin. But as Otis is coming out to the ring, Jey Uso hadn't quite made it out of the ring area yet, and he's walking up the ramp, and they kind of cross paths. They have an awkward stare down as he passes by, and Otis just, you know, doesn't think anything of it, kind of just continues to make his way to the ring before he's attacked from behind with a chair by Jey Uso. And Jey just continues to put a beat down on Otis by hitting him with a chair over 15 times, probably, all over his upper body. And then it goes to commercial break. But they show that during the commercial break, Otis is actually helped backstage by officials and Chad Gable. This isn't the only time during the night that we see Jey Uso have these, you know, random freak, these random beat downs on people. And maybe it's not so random, considering that Otis was on the Survivor Series team that lost. And Jey basically just got chewed out for losing that match and not having the respect of his team. So obviously, Jey just went ahead and took the initiative to take the anger out on Otis. So the match between Otis and Baron Corbin does not happen. Instead, we get a Ziggler and Rude versus the Street Profits match in a non-title match, so it's just a regular tag team. But both of these teams get a little bit of mic work before they come to the match, or before the match begins, sorry. Dolph and Rude use their time to talk about Otis's weight and how he has too much on his plate, using the Thanksgiving as a little bit of an example. And the Street Profits use their time to take shots at Dolph for being a wannabe HBK. This match wasn't very long, but the Street Profits looked pretty impressive, I must say. Angelo Dawkins in particular. You know, the reason why it looked so good could have been because it was such a small sample size. Like I said, it was a relatively quick match. But towards the around 4.5 minute mark, you could say, Dolph and Dawkins were both sent out of the ring, and Robert Roode hit Montez Ford with the infamous roll-up to beat the Street Profits in, like I said, a non-title match. But you can almost guarantee that this win guarantees Ziggler and Rude the number one contendership as far as TLC goes. And who knows, it could be next week on SmackDown. You guys all know how many championship matches have been on SmackDown here recently. So it would not surprise me if they gave us that match sooner than TLC. But they can definitely try to give us a little bit of build into this program, and then maybe just deliver. I mean, TLC isn't that far away, so you can maybe see some different types of promos from the Street Profits here in the next couple weeks, you know, just taking more shots at them. I just hope that they pull back a little bit on the championship matches on SmackDown and just try to save a little bit of the good stuff for the pay-per-views. I will say, though, Ziggler and Rude have been pretty persistent as far as their chase for these SmackDown tag team titles. So, I mean, if nobody else is going to act like they mean anything to them, I mean, I have no problem with Ziggler and Rude getting in the tag team picture and maybe challenging the Street Profits for those titles. But after this, we get a couple backstage interviews with Caleb Braxton. I've noticed that this is kind of SmackDown's routine now. They kind of have at least two or three Caleb Braxton interviews backstage, and they like to put them back to back and with commercial breaks in between them. I'm just kind of catching on to that since I've been watching SmackDown a lot more in detail, I guess you could say. I've been paying a lot more attention to it. But anyway, this backstage interview was Caleb Braxton and Daniel Bryan. And she asks him his strategy for his match tonight against Sami Zayn. And he said his strategy is acceptance and Zen. Acceptance because he's had to accept the fact that Jey Uso has a devil on his shoulder and is the best he's ever been. And he also has to accept the fact that somebody he's known for 15 years, talking about Sami Zayn, is delusional. He said that Sami's delusional, that everybody is out to get him. And Daniel clarifies by saying he's not out to get Sami. He is, however, out to get his Intercontinental Championship. And after he beats him tonight, he'll be one step closer to that. So like we all expected, we got a little bit of the Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn program that we possibly thought might happen. I'm not really sure if we're going to get anything more out of it because of more things that happen later on in the show with both Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan. So whenever this happened in real time, I was definitely getting more and more invested, especially because we found out about the match between Daniel and Sami later on tonight. So I thought that was just the start of the program. But like I said, more things happen with that a little bit later, so we will definitely get more into that. But before that, we have the second backstage interview with Caleb Braxton, and this time it's with the Mysterios with Buddy Murphy. And she asks Ray if he is relieved that the situation with Seth Rollins is over. Ray says yes, and he says that he's thankful to be part of such a great family. He mentions getting to witness his son's career take off, his daughter grow into a mature, outspoken woman, and he says that he's thankful Buddy Murphy has seen what a piece of garbage Seth is and that he is nobody's disciple in reference to Buddy Murphy. But that warm, fuzzy response is cut short by Baron Corbin, who comes in and immediately starts firing shots. He says that it's a shame Ray couldn't pass any of his in-ring talent onto his son, and he points out that he did, however, pass on bad judgment and character onto his kids. And he then calls out Murphy and asks Ray if he really thinks Murphy will be around next Thanksgiving or if he's just trying to ride the Mysterio's coattails while they're still worth something. I will say, though, in terms of Baron Corbin, this is the first time since I've known him that I don't hate to see him on my TV. Just basically the last 2 weeks, because this is 2 weeks in a row now that he's come out and basically spoke the truth. Last week it was about the New Day being on SmackDown when they shouldn't have been. This week it's about the Mysterios, and he's basically just saying what all the fans are thinking. And usually whenever WWE does that, they're trying to get the fans to be behind somebody. So I'm not sure if they're trying to set something up for Baron Corbin to maybe turn babyface. I mean, I don't want to speculate too much on that, but even here later on in the match that comes from this, which is Baron Corbin and Buddy Murphy, you kind of see a little bit more of that. So we will get more into that whenever it comes up. After this interview with Caleb Braxton, however, we got the Thank You Taker tribute, which is the same one they showed on Raw and Survivor Series, so I'm sure everybody has seen that by now. Definitely a good job by the production crew for WWE. I really enjoyed watching that, especially the first time. It was really cool. But after that, we get Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn in their one-on-one non-title match as well. And this match begins with Sami standing in the ring, as usual, complaining about having to defend his championship one day after an American holiday, and then goes on about how he doesn't respect Thanksgiving as a holiday. And then he begins claiming that the WWE is trying to sabotage him. But before he can say much more, he's interrupted by Daniel Bryan's music, and this match begins. But it actually begins at a pretty slow pace. There's a lot of technical wrestling and grappling, a lot of Sami making his way to the ring or to the ropes to cause a stoppage by the official. Daniel Bryan actually has a rough spot where he attempts to jump off the top turnbuckle to the outside of the ring, but misses Sami and hits the barricade pretty hard. Moments later, you see Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn on the apron, kind of outside of the ropes. They're standing on the edge of the ring, and you see Zayn take a scratch at Daniel Bryan's eye and then push him into the corner post, and then he hits a brainbuster on the edge of the ring, basically on that hard spot to really do some damage. I mean, that spot right there really kind of was just this match. Sorry, that move right there basically exemplified how this match was. I mean, it was surprisingly very physical. I spent a lot of time outside of the ring, eventually leading up the ramp and even further as Sami Zayn continued to run backstage. And obviously, Daniel Bryan followed him, but only one of them made their way back to the ring. You see Zayn sprinting down the ramp and barely makes it into the ring to avoid being counted out. Daniel Bryan, however, does end up getting counted out. And understandably so, because we see him being beaten backstage by Jey Uso. This is another one of those just brutal beatdowns that Jey Uso has during tonight's episode of SmackDown. And this one takes multiple officials and Kevin Owens to pull Jey off of Daniel. And after, you know, some pushing and shoving, trying to pull him off, Jey Uso walks away, running his mouth to Kevin Owens. And as you'd expect, Kevin Owens tells an official to make sure Daniel Bryan is okay and then says, I'm going where he's going. And then continues to follow Jey Uso. However, SmackDown goes to a commercial break. And then whenever we come back, we do get the backstage segment with Roman, Jey, and Kevin Owens. Kevin walks up and just cuts right to the chase. He gets in Roman's face and says that he's tired of his family issues affecting everybody on SmackDown. He says that if he wants to go on his ego trips and sit at his little table, that's fine. But now he's getting in Jey's head. And he also tells Roman that for someone who talks a lot about family, he sure does treat his like trash. And after Owens walks away, Roman looks at Jey Uso and says that he might not take pride in the way his sons, talking about Jey, the way Jey's sons look at him, but Roman takes pride in the way that his sons look at him. So he tells Jey that Kevin Owens doesn't look at him with fear and that he wants him to fix that. So immediately following this, we get Natalya versus Bianca Belair, and Bayley joins Michael Cole on commentary. And anytime there's a guest on commentary, especially with a women's match, the match itself almost comes second. But I actually realized tonight that I do love Hill Bailey on commentary. She actually called out Michael Cole one-on-one to a match, which I've heard her do before, and it kind of makes me wonder if we're ever actually going to get a Bailey versus Michael Cole match. I know it's pretty far-fetched and very unlikely, but it's actually just pretty funny. If you guys have ever noticed any of their encounters whenever she's on commentary, multiple times she's called them out and said that they can go one-on-one, and it's just pretty funny to see Michael Cole's reaction. But anyway, I thought that this match was going to be a quick loss for Natalya. I'm not going to lie. I thought that with how just hot Bianca Belair has been lately, I just thought Natalya wasn't going to be much of a match for her. But she surprisingly held her own. And she did that until the match made its way outside near the announce table and near Bayley. And Bayley began taunting Bianca, telling her not to get counted out again like she did at Survivor Series, costing the team the loss. Or so that's what Bayley said. But Belair eventually takes one shot at Bayley and knocks her down. That's really all she needed, knocks her headset off of her. And then once she gets up, Bayley tries to make her way up to the apron to interfere, but Bianca actually pushes Natalya into Bayley, knocks Bayley off the ring. And then Bianca hits Natalya with the roll-up. Sorry, I know that was probably a little bit confusing. But Bianca Belair does get the second roll-up finish win of the night over Natalya. And next, we get the Buddy Murphy match versus Baron Corbin, the match I was talking about a little bit earlier. Of course, Buddy Murphy has the Mysterios at ringside. And this match had a lot of early interference by Mysterios. I mean, if you were just watching this for the first time tonight and you just tuned in during this match and it was the first thing you seen, you would definitely expect that Baron Corbin was the babyface and the Mysterios were a heel faction. I mean, every single one of them at some point in the match interfered. It definitely was something that you would see like a heel faction do. Corbin was surprisingly like dominating the match despite all of the interference. He was handling Murphy with ease for, I mean, a majority of the match, even whenever Buddy Murphy tried to do the pinfall on Corbin. He put his leg on the rope and Dominic pushed it off. So it gave Murphy the win. But after the match, Corbin says that it wasn't a one-on-one. It was a four-on-one. And then he challenges Murphy to a rematch next week, except this time he will be prepared. What does it mean by that? That usually means he'll have backup or weapons. It could also be character-related, meaning that he's going to be willing to go a step further as far as maybe inflicting more damage or just being darker. I'm not sure if they're going to go that far, though. I think it might just be he may have a little bit of backup with him next week or come to the ring with maybe a steel chair or a kendo stick or some type of weapon just to maybe even the odds a little bit. But moving on from that match, we get what was supposed to be a backstage interview with Caleb Braxton and Sami Zayn. And This was a strange camera angle that kind of had Kayla in the background to let you know that there was supposed to be an interview or something like that. But the main focus was definitely on Big E kind of talking and BSing with Apollo Crews until Sammy walks up and says that they're blocking his way and asks them to move. And they don't. So he begins to brag about how he just beat future Hall of Famer Daniel Bryan in 10 seconds when most people can only beat him in 3 seconds. I didn't really get how that was necessarily something to brag about or how it even made sense, but that's what he went with, so that's what it was. But he then rubs it in Apollo's face that he did the exact same thing to him a couple of weeks ago. And then Sammy and Big E begin to exchange some words as Big E tells him that Sammy relies on countouts and exposed turnbuckles to get wins and that his margin for error is razor thin. Zayn then accuses Big E of being jealous that he's Intercontinental Champion and that Big E's last Intercontinental Championship run was many moons ago. So a humbled Big E kind of sticks his hand out to shake Sammy's, and Sammy agrees. And as you'd expect, Big E just squeezes Sami Zayn's hand, but he does it for 10 seconds to, I guess, just rub it in Sami's face that he was trying to brag about the whole 10-second thing with Daniel Bryan. But I don't even really think that was important. I think that this was the main thing I took from this was the possibility of Big E getting an Intercontinental Championship run. I think that WWE mentioned how long it's been for a specific reason. And I feel like that's a good place for Big E to start as far as his singles run goes, is maybe a program with Sami Zayn. And like I said earlier, with the Daniel Bryan getting attacked by Jey Uso immediately after his match with Sami Zayn, that might kind of put a hold on Sami Zayn versus Daniel Bryan and put more focus on Daniel Bryan being back in that Roman Reigns or Jey Uso picture. So that would free up Sami Zayn to have something with Big E here. And I would not mind it. I think that because of these count-out references, they're probably going to have a no-count-out match at some point, maybe against Big E. I could see that happening at TLC too, but like I said earlier with SmackDown or with WWE in general, you can't really just expect them to save the championship matches for TLC. But given that TLC is a gimmick pay-per-view and they're using these count-out things, I just think it makes too much sense to go down that route with the no-count-out match against Big E just to maybe kickstart his singles run, because right now it just cannot get off the ground. He is only seen backstage doing segments with either the Street Profits or now with Sami Zayn. It's time he gets something going that he can really sink his teeth in, as well as us fans, to really buy in that he is a new character, or at least going down a new path as a single star. And after this, we got a backstage segment with Carmella, and we finally got somewhat of an explanation from her. This is what I was mentioning last week that I was hoping that we would get from her. And she says that now that Bayley and Sasha are done playing their little junior high games, she can show the entire WWE universe that she is the real dominant woman in the division. And she says that she used to be where Sasha is in terms of being a champion and having fans. That's definitely debatable, but I get what she's saying. She goes on by saying that her career turned for the worst when she started doing things for the fans, but we can rest assured that she is no longer doing anything for anyone except her, and now she's the one calling the shots, and when she says jump, we say how high. She snaps her fingers after this, signaling that she wanted someone to bring her something, I'm guessing, because that's what happened. It was revealed that that something was actually a glass of champagne, and the person delivering it wasn't who she expected. All you could see on the person's hand was jewelry on the wrist until they turned the hand a little bit, and then you could see the brass knuckles that say boss, and the champagne is thrown in her face, and she gets put in the bank statement because obviously it's Sasha Banks. But it takes Adam Pearce and another WWE official to pull Sasha off of Carmella, but this was probably the one part of the show that I really wasn't a big fan of. I mean, I just feel like that whole her walking up with the champagne in her hand and turning her hand. I just think that probably sounded better in their heads than it was actually delivered and what it looked like on the screen. I mean, it just, for one, Sasha has blue hair and she wears sparkly outfits, especially tonight. If you go back and watch, her outfit was definitely sparkly. How in the hell are you not going to see her coming even out of the corner of your eye? I mean, it just really makes Carmella look stupid that she didn't see Sasha Banks walking up there. But that's if you're nitpicking. One thing I was thinking whenever she turned her hand and you could see the boss brass knuckles, I thought that they might have been playing into something along the lines of Carmella was just like taking a shot at Sasha by saying like, this is who you are, somebody who like brings me my champagne. And then I realized that it was really Sasha, and that's when I kind of got confused. I was like, wait, they really did that? And sure enough, that's what they did. But like I said, I mean, if we're getting towards the end of the show and that's really all I have to complain about, then I guess the show itself was a success, at least as far as I'm concerned, just strictly because, I mean, there's only like one more match and this is all I had to complain about. So SmackDown as a whole, I don't really have a lot of negative things to say. However, this is just the one thing that I was hoping that Carmella would give a little bit more of an explanation for what she is after. Apparently it is the women's championship just because she wants to put the entire division on notice. But like I said, this was just poorly executed. I don't think it was a great idea. Hopefully next week they can bounce back and maybe get a little bit of something better that we can all get excited about, because like I said, this did not do it for me. But up next, we get the main event, which is Kevin Owens versus Jey Uso. The match that got started earlier tonight, like we said, with Jey Uso attacking Daniel Bryan backstage and Kevin Owens chasing him off and going and confronting Roman Reigns. And this match, you can see Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, they're shown watching backstage. And as far as the match is concerned, it's pretty back and forth. It's almost identical to their match on SmackDown a few weeks ago, except this one ends via disqualification when Jey Uso brings a chair into the ring and starts hitting Owens with it. But after he does this, the camera shows Roman and Paul with pleased looks on their faces backstage. You can just tell that like they're happy with what they're seeing, or at least proud of Jey Uso. But unfortunately for Jey, he goes outside of the ring to tear apart the announce table, which gives Kevin Owens enough time to recover from those chair shots. And then he hits Jey with a stunner. And that was basically all she wrote for Jey Uso tonight. After that, I mean, it's pretty much all downhill. The camera goes back to the shot of Roman and Paul, only this time they have disappointed looks on their faces. And Kevin Owens continues to just lay a brutal beating on Jey. He hits him with the chair God knows how many times. Hits him on the front of his upper body, not just the back. And those shots are always the ones that look the most painful, I guess is the word I'm trying to say. Whenever it looks like they're trying to brace the hit with their arms and their elbows just get smacked with the chair. I feel like I'd rather just take a shot to the back than have my fingers and knuckles just get hit with those steel chairs. But anyway, Kevin Owens continues to put this beating on Jey, and then he looks directly into the camera and starts talking to Roman. He says that this is Roman's fault and this is happening to his family because of him. And then Owens tells Roman that he's not scared of him. He's not scared of anybody. And then he begs him to just come find him. He begs him to come out to the ring. He grabs one of the announce chairs, gets comfortable outside of the ring, and he asks Roman where he is and that he'll be waiting. And then SmackDown goes off the air, as you can see Roman watching backstage. First of all, I love seeing SmackDown go off the air in different ways, not just the immediate after the finish of the main event, kind of just super predictable. I like how things like this kind of happen that make you want to see more. Like, I know I was hoping that Roman would at least go out to the ring and say something, or maybe would get a little bit, but the fact that it ended with, or it left you wanting more for next week, I can definitely appreciate that. I love seeing Kevin Owens stand up to Roman. I feel like we might see more people do that now. Whether it's going to work out for him, I'm not sure, but it's nice to see somebody at least show that they're not scared of Roman and that they don't agree that he is this top dog that he claims to be, and basically call him out for being such an a-hole to all of the people in his family. And that's what we're getting from Kevin Owens here. But that should do it for the SmackDown review part of the show. I also noticed, again, I wrote here in my notes, this is the third week in a row with no Lars Sullivan. I'm kind of just going to settle my expectations there. I might have gotten a little bit ahead of myself with thinking they had some plans for him. And maybe they do. It's just not happening yet. But I guess maybe if he doesn't appear in the Royal Rumble, then maybe you got something to worry about. But right now, I'm not really worried about it. I am just hoping that whenever he does come back, they actually have a plan that makes sense for how they're going to book him and build his character going forward as a member of SmackDown. All right, and like I promised, we are going to have a top five this week. I'm sorry again for not having one last week, but I said I was going to have one this week, and that is exactly what we're going to do right now. And that is the top five wrestlers due for a big 2021. And like I said, I'm not predicting that these guys are going to go on long runs and be just big time superstars, although it's definitely possible with all of these guys, and some are more obvious than others. But this is just basically me saying that they are in good shape as far as where they are in their careers right now and what we can expect in the near future as early as 2021. But we will get started here with none other than an NXT wrestler who everybody should be familiar with by now, and that is Rhea Ripley. I felt like the coronavirus, what it did last year, wiping out WrestleMania as far as the fans being there, being in Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay, I think that did a very big disservice to Rhea. She was about to have I was pretty hyped up for it, so I'm going to say a pretty hyped up match with Charlotte. I think that they matched up pretty well as far as how they're built physically. And I mean, they're both tall, strong women. I thought that match right there could have definitely put Rhea over. Charlotte did end up getting the win in the Performance Center, but part of me wonders if the plans would have been different had the WWE landscape not just been completely shifted by what happened during the pandemic last year. But with how Rhea was being booked before that, I mean, Survivor Series, she was making appearances on Raw and SmackDown. She showed up and ultimately challenged Charlotte herself whenever Charlotte won the Royal Rumble. So I just thought that they really were attaching a rocket ship to her last year, and that it all just kind of went out the window as soon as the pandemic happened and they basically just had to adjust on the fly. But I feel like her time in NXT is probably coming to an end soon. At least maybe, I'm not sure when they do the call-ups, if it's still right after WrestleMania. But I do expect Rhea Ripley to be in the Royal Rumble. I already said last month that Bianca Belair was my pick to win the Royal Rumble, and I'm sticking by that for now. But I do expect Rhea Ripley to be in the Royal Rumble and have a pretty strong showing, setting herself up for a pretty big 2021. And up next at number four, I have Mustafa Ali. And me thinking that Mustafa Ali has a big future actually dates back pretty far. Not necessarily that far. I mean, he hasn't been in WWE for that long. But if you guys remember, he was actually the one who was supposed to be in the Elimination Chamber match that Kofi Kingston ultimately made his showing that sent him on his push that ultimately ended with him winning the WWE Championship. That was supposed to be Mustafa Ali, and Randy Orton injured him unintentionally on an episode of SmackDown, so he had to be replaced in that match, and that push that he was supposed to be on went out the window. So you fast forward a little bit, and I know a lot of people think that maybe that hacker angle that they were going on, I don't remember exactly when that was, but you guys all know what I'm talking about. The hacker angle that was revealed to be Mustafa Ali, I actually thought that that was Mustafa Ali when it was going on. I know I'm not alone there. I actually read an article posted by somebody that had a bunch of reasons why it was Mustafa Ali, and this was way before the Retribution stuff even was thought of. So I feel like maybe they did have big plans for him. It just never really worked out. And for whatever reason, whether it's injury or him being kept off TV because of merch sales, from what he said, I'm not sure how much or how true that is. But basically, I feel like now when you look at this retribution angle that they got going, they clearly have some type of big plans for Mustafa. Whenever I made the prediction for Bianca, I almost said that Mustafa Ali was my pick to win the Men's Royal Rumble. I didn't want to go that far yet, but I'm not really sure. I mean, if Retribution, the other members of Retribution are also in the Royal Rumble, I feel like that might help him out a lot, but we're not here to talk about that. We're just here to talk about Mustafa Ali himself, and I just think that with the members of Retribution on his side on Raw, you can probably expect him to have at least some sort of a role consistently. I mean, Retribution seems to be on the TV every week. Since I've been doing the SmackDown reviews, I actually realize how much I don't pay attention to Raw or in comparison to how much I do pay attention to SmackDown. So I'm not really sure if he's necessarily a main event player on that roster yet. But like I said, this is for 2021. And I feel like once Retribution has a little bit of, I don't know if I want to say latches in their belt or just more wins, because right now they are not necessarily coming out on the winning side of all these matches that they are in. So it's hard to take them too serious. But I feel like if they do somehow manage to, not just let this Retribution angle flop. If they let this Retribution angle flop, then obviously Mustafa Ali is probably going to go down a downward path that is not good. But if they can hit this out of the park, which the jury's still out on it, I feel like it could make or break Mustafa Ali going forward in the WWE. And up next at number 3, really should come at no surprise. This is a member of the SmackDown roster, and you guys have heard me rave about her before, and it is Bianca Belair. Just as far as who she is as a performer, if you look at her moveset, she can hang with the best. Her strength, there's no one. I mean, she competes with Nia Jax in that department. And just believability, I feel like, yeah, if things were to pop off in the middle of a ring, I'm probably putting my money on Bianca Belair being able to hold her own. And you have seen, I mean, just touching on the Survivor Series spot real quick, everyone kind of knew what was going to happen with Lana. Not necessarily how it happened, but they knew that she was going to have a big spot in that match. But once I kind of saw how it was playing out as the match went on, I was actually pretty upset that they didn't let Bianca Belair end up winning the match for SmackDown herself, because yeah, if Lana was going to go in and have an impressive win or an impressive like actual finish to the match, like maybe putting Nia Jax to a table somehow and then going in there and securing the win for her team, which I know that was probably unlikely. But once I saw that Lana really wasn't doing anything in the ring and that they were just going to have that little count out finish, I was actually upset that they didn't have that moment be more for Bianca Belair, because I felt like that could have been more beneficial for her, setting her up on SmackDown as a main event player more so. I mean, and it didn't really hurt her. I mean, she still had a good showing. I just thought that was a little bit of an opportunity wasted. But as I've said before, and I just said a little bit ago, she is still Bianca Belair, my pick to win the Women's Royal Rumble. I could be flat out wrong, and it could be a big return. Of a female wrestler who ends up getting the win. But I just think that the Royal Rumble, at least this year, should be more about the future. And they should have stars who aren't quite there yet, who could really use that push, such as Rhea Ripley or Bianca Belair. I feel like the Royal Rumble should be won by one of those women, or even just some women, or some of one of the women wrestlers on NXT. Just a woman that we haven't seen. I mean, it's pretty thin if you look at the top of the women's division just as a whole. I mean, you have Asuka. When Becky Lynch is there, you have her and Charlotte and Sasha. That's pretty much it. I mean, there's really not a lot. There's a lot of women kind of in that mid-tier who are trying to scratch and just have that breakthrough. And I think that Bianca Belair with the Royal Rumble win will definitely surpass a lot of women who have been there longer than her. And up next at number two is somebody on Raw who I can definitely see being the person who eventually takes the title off of Drew McIntyre for the long haul, and that is Keith Lee. He actually just got a new song, which I know is a big positive for a lot of the WWE fans. They weren't a fan of his little generic song that they give to a lot of people who come up to the main roster and just completely butcher everything that people loved about his character. But I feel like he's kind of getting a little bit back to being himself. And obviously, he's still in the main event picture. He's still getting big wins. And he's just somebody who you can tell that WWE has big plans for him. I'm not sure if Vince McMahon will be fully on the Keith Lee train as, you know, booking him as a, you know, top player in the company. But if we're just talking about talent and somebody who definitely deserves to have a big 2021, it's definitely him. I mean, the fans are as behind him as they are anybody. I know that really doesn't necessarily mean too much right now with an empty crowd, but still, I mean, the fans are still the ones who are watching every week, and you want to still keep them happy. And Keith Lee is definitely a fan favorite. And he just has that big presence, you know, just that monster presence about him where not many guys are going to overpower him. And also just with the way he talks, I mean, he's very unique in that aspect of his character. So I just think that on Raw, he definitely is set up. I know Braun Strowman's over there as well, who is suspended right now for whatever reasons with Adam Pearce. I do not know what they're going to do there, but anyway, Keith Lee is somebody who I can see on Raw having a very big 2021. And while we're on the Royal Rumble topic, do not be surprised if Keith Lee actually has a much better showing than he had last year. If you remember last year, he had that run-in with Brock Lesnar, and I was genuinely wondering who was going to take Keith Lee out. It's slipping my mind right now how it happened. I know he got taken out with another big man. I'm not sure if it was Braun Strowman, but if that happened to Keith Lee last year when not really a lot of people knew who he was, I could definitely see him having a bigger showing this year in the Royal Rumble and maybe setting himself up for a big WrestleMania moment come April, I believe, in Los Angeles. I'm not sure if they're still going to do that. Obviously, they're still just nobody knows what's going to happen. I hope that WrestleMania isn't in front of no fans again, but at this point, things are not necessarily looking too hot. But I'm not here to get negative. I'm here to stay positive. So Big E, I'm hoping... Or not Big E, Jesus, I am completely messing this up right now. Keith Lee has a huge 2021. And coming in at number one here, it might be a little bit of a surprise considering how the rest of the list has shaped up. But if you look at it, it's really actually the right answer. There should be no other answer. The number one wrestler due for a huge 2021 is definitely, in my opinion, Roman Reigns. And I know you guys could say, I mean, he's already had his breakout years. He's already been a top guy for how long? I understand all of that. My argument to that would be the expression, and I'm sure it's used many different ways, but when you throw mud at the wall enough times, eventually something's going to stick. And I feel like that's kind of what Vince McMahon has done with Roman Reigns. He's completely just fumbled the opportunity many, many times as far as turning him heel. He's had several botched opportunities at being a babyface. He cannot get over with the fans completely. And I just think that what they have going right now, I mean, if we're talking 2021, this dude can literally go undefeated and keep his championship and not lose it for the entire calendar year. That would not surprise me at all. So whenever you're talking about a big year, there is literally nobody who is, in at this moment right now, there's nobody who is looking like they're going to have a bigger 2021 than Roman Reigns. And I just feel like with Vince McMahon, how high he is on Roman, I mean, everybody knows that. I think that he is going to milk this for all that it's worth. And we could see a very, very long Roman Reigns run of just absolute dominance where he holds on to that strap. And, I mean, there could be the guy that takes it off of him might not even be on the SmackDown roster right now. I mean, we don't even know what's going to happen there, but I know it's not going to happen anytime soon. Kevin Owens probably is going to get into maybe a program with him, but I don't think it's going to hurt him at all. You look at Daniel Bryan, I feel like Roman would go through both of those guys just with how he's being built right now. Again, like I said earlier, I do respect Kevin Owens standing up to Roman Reigns. I hope we see a lot more of that. But just with how Roman is being booked right now, there's nobody right now who's going to touch him. If Drew McIntyre couldn't get the win, I definitely don't expect Kevin Owens to do it. So as far as 2021 goes, I do not think Roman's going to be in the Royal Rumble, obviously, as champion. But he is the one guy who doesn't need a Royal Rumble to kickstart him having a big year. He just needs to continue to show up and win these matches and continue to go further on this heel run and develop this character even deeper with Paul Heyman on his side and obviously Jey Uso as his lackey. But that's the top five this week that I have for you. Sorry again for last week not having one, but as long as time, I guess you could say, permits me to, I will try to have one of these every week for you. And it'll always vary on what it's going to be. If you guys have any suggestions, at Michael5Ritter, you can get at me on Twitter and let me know. I definitely want you guys' feedback. It's something that can make this show be better. I don't want to do things that you guys don't like, and I would definitely love to do things that you guys do want to hear. So if there's any suggestions, feel free to send them my way. But like I said, guys, that will do it for the show. So I appreciate you guys listening. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. And until next week, I will talk to you guys later.